Welcome to today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger. It is Monday, March 25. I'm your reader, Doug Kretzinger, and here is our first story in the front page of the Globe Gazette. Headline reads, Russia attacked, suspects appear in court. And it goes on, dateline is Moscow. It's an Associated Press article. Suspects in the Russia concert hall attack, which left more than 130 dead, arrived at a Moscow district court on Sunday night. There was a heavy police presence around the Basmany district court, which is expected to determine pretrial restrictions for the men who are suspected of opening fire on crowds of concertgoers at the suburban Crocus City Hall on Friday. One of the suspects was led blindfolded into the courtroom. His blindfold was removed and a black eye was visible. The attack, claimed by an affiliate of the Islamic State group, is the deadliest on Russian soil in years. U.S. intelligence officials said they had confirmed the ISIS affiliate's claim. Russian authorities arrested four suspected attackers Saturday, with seven more detained on suspicion of involvement in the attack. Russian President Vladimir Putin said in a nighttime address to the nation on Saturday. He claimed they were captured while fleeing to Ukraine, something that Kiev firmly denies. Family and friends of those still missing waited for news of their loved ones as Russia observed a day of national mourning on Sunday. Events at cultural institutions were canceled. Flags were lowered to half-staff, and television entertainment and advertising were suspended. According to state news agency RIA Novosti, a steady stream of people added to a makeshift memorial near the burnt-out concert hall, creating a huge mound of flowers. People came to a concert, some people came to relax with their families, and any one of us could have been in that situation, and I want to express my condolences to all the families that were affected here, and I want to pay tribute to these people, Andrei Kondakov, one of the mourners who came to lay flowers, told the Associated Press. It is a tragedy that has affected our entire country, kindergarten employee Marina Korozhenova said. It just doesn't even make sense that small children were affected by this event. Three children were among the dead. As rescuers continue to search the damaged building and the death toll rises as more bodies are found, some families still don't know if relatives who went to the event targeted by gunmen on Friday are alive. Moscow's Department of Health said Sunday, it has begun identifying the bodies of those killed via DNA testing, which will take at least 2 weeks. Igor Pogogodev desperately sought any details of his wife's whereabouts after she went to the concert and stopped responding to his messages. He hadn't seen a message from Yana Pogodeva since she sent him two photos from the Crocus City Hall music venue. After he saw the reports of gunmen coming and opening fire on concertgoers, he rushed to the site but couldn't find her in the ambulances or among the hundreds of people who made their way out of the venue. Quote, I went around, searched, I asked everyone, I showed photographs. No one saw anything, no one could say anything, he told the AP in a video message. He watched flames bursting out of the building as he made frantic calls to a hotline for relatives of the victims, but received no information. As the death toll mounted Saturday, Pogodeev scoured hospitals in the Russian capital and the Moscow region looking for information on newly admitted patients. His wife wasn't among the 182 reported injured, nor on the list of 60 victims authorities already identified, he said. The Moscow region's Emergency Situations Ministry, posted a video Sunday showing equipment dismantling the damaged music venue to give rescuers access. Putin has called the attack, quote, a bloody, barbaric terrorist attack, and said Russian authorities captured the four suspects as they were trying to escape to Ukraine through a window prepared for them on the Ukrainian side of the border. Russian media broadcast videos that apparently showed the detention and interrogation of the suspects, including one who told the cameras he was approached by an unidentified assistant to an Islamic preacher via a messaging app and paid to take part in the raid. Putin didn't mention ISIS in his speech in the nation, and Kiev accused him and other Russian politicians of falsely linking Ukraine to the assault to stoke fervor for Russia's fight in Ukraine, which recently entered its third year. Russia conducted its third big missile attack on Ukraine in the past 4 days, and the second to target the capital, Kiev. In Ukraine, the governor of the Lviv region, Maxim Kotsitsky, said on the Telegram platform that critical infrastructure was hit in Russia's missile strike, but he didn't specify what precisely was struck. No deaths or injuries were reported. Later, authorities said rescuers put out a fire at a critical infrastructure facility in the Lviv region, which was attacked while missiles and drones at night and in the morning. The head of Kiev's military administration, Serhiy Popko, said Russia used cruise missiles launched from Tu-95MS strategic bombers. An air alert in the capital lasted for more than 2 hours as rockets entered Kiev from the north, according to preliminary data. There were no casualties or damage in the capital, he said. Poland's Armed Forces Operational Command said there was a violation of Polish airspace at 4:23 a.m. by one of the cruise missiles launched by Russia against towns in western Ukraine. The object entered near Ozerdo, a village in a region near the border with Ukraine, and stayed in Polish airspace for 39 seconds, it said. One person was killed Saturday night and four others wounded in a Ukrainian missile attack on Sevastopol on the Russian-occupied peninsula, city governor Mikhail Razokhaev said. Right below that lead story on page one is this one. Headline reads, Plan Raises Social Security Retirement Age and Bans Abortion, written by Tom Barton, Globe Gazette, Des Moines Register, Des Moines Bureau. And it reads, a group of more than 170 U.S. House Republicans released a new budget proposal that would raise the Social Security retirement age, restructure Medicare, ban abortion, and threaten fertility treatments. The budget plan was released Wednesday by the Republican Study Committee, whose members comprise more than three-quarters of the House Republican caucus, many of whom are allies of former President Donald Trump, the presumptive 2024 Republican nominee for president. Iowa U.S. Representatives Randy Feistra, Ashley Hinson, and Zachary Nunn are members of that committee. The proposal came 2 days before House Republicans voted and passed a separate $1.2 trillion budget, government funding package, rather, on Friday in an effort to avert a government shutdown. Hinson, Nunn, and Representative Marianette Miller Meeks voted to approve that bill, while Feistra voted against it. On Social Security, the RSC budget that plan proposes modest adjustments to the retirement age for future retirees to account for increases in life expectancy, but does not specify what the retirement age would be. Advocates of raising the Social Security retirement age in the past have proposed raising it from 67 to 69. The plan also calls for, quote, modest and delayed changes, end quote, to the primary insurance amount, PIA, benefit formula. It would also limit and phase out auxiliary benefits for high-income earners, but does not specify what that threshold would be, and gradually move toward, quote, a flat benefit, end quote. House Republicans emphasized those ideas would not take effect immediately. Quote, the RSC budget does not cut or delay retirement benefits for any senior in or near retirement, end quote. Hinson, speaking to reporters Friday, said she does not support cuts of any kind to Social Security or raising the retirement age. I will always support Social Security, and I will reject any cuts to Social Security, said Hinson of Marion. I will also reject the Democrats' fear-mongering on this issue, asserting trillions of dollars in spending approved by Democrats has fueled inflation that is hurting seniors and those on fixed incomes the most right now. Given the nation's rising debt with insolvency approaching, House Republicans said Congress, quote, has a moral and practical obligation to address the problems, end quote, with federal entitlement programs. These, went on to say, these common sense incremental reforms will simply buy Congress time to come together and negotiate policies that can secure Social Security solvency for decades to come, according to the budget plan. Medicare is projected to become insolvent in 2028, and Social Security will follow in 2033. Without action, benefits would be forcibly cut 23% across the board unless more revenues are added, according to the Social Security Trustees' most recent report. Unlike the Biden budget, which does nothing to prevent these cuts, the RSC budget would phase in common-sense bipartisan reforms that have been narrowly tailored to affect no senior in or near retirement, according to the RSC. Other items. The new budget also calls for converting Medicare to a premium support model, a proposal pushed by the Republican former House Speaker Paul Ryan while he was in power. Under the RSC proposal, seniors would receive subsidies they could use on private plans that would compete against traditional Medicare benefits. The size of the subsidies could be pegged to the average premium or second lowest price in a particular market, according to the RSC proposal. There is broad agreement the programs cannot continue as they are without raising taxes, reducing spending on benefits, or transferring money from the general fund to cover the projected shortfall. The RSC budget proposal rejects the first two options. Raising taxes on people will further punish them and burden the broader economy, something that the spend and print regime has proven to be disastrous and regressive, the budget says, and adding that the committee also opposes a multi-trillion-dollar general fund transfer that worsens our fiscal situation. More than 600,000 Iowans rely on Social Security and Medicare benefits. President Joe Biden has repeatedly vowed to protect the programs from cuts, instead proposing in his recent White House budget to cover the future shortfall by raising taxes on upper earners. The RSC budget also proposes making Trump's 2017 tax cuts for individuals permanent. It calls for the elimination of the community eligibility provision from the National School Lunch Program, which helps ensure that millions of children have access to food throughout their school day, and proposes to cut total federal Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, and Affordable Care Act marketplace subsidy spending by more than half over the next decade. Facing such drastic reductions in federal Medicaid funding, states will have no choice but to institute truly draconian cuts to eligibility, benefits, and provider reimbursement rates, according to Edwin Park, a research professor at the Georgetown University McCourt School of Public Policy Center for Children and Families. That would likely drive tens of millions into the ranks of the uninsured and severely reduce access to health care and long-term services and supports needed by low-income children, families, seniors, people with disabilities, and other adults, Park wrote of the RSC budget. Moreover, because Medicaid is the largest source of federal funding for states, block-granting Medicaid would also likely lead to deep budget cuts to other state spending like the K-12 education, end quote. Hinson spokesperson Sophie Seed responded, "The president's massive and disastrous budget deserves equal, if not more, scrutiny than one of the many budgets proposed by conservative groups that aspire to cut reckless spending and ensure future generations aren't saddled with debt." End quote. Apart from fiscal policy, the RSC budget plan also endorses a series of bills designed to advance the cause of life, including a national abortion ban and the Life at Conception Act, which would establish legal protections for human beings at the moment of fertilization. The Life at Conception Act, endorsed by the Republican Study Committee, has become a flashpoint in the wake of Alabama halting in vitro fertilization last month. The Alabama Supreme Court ruled that frozen embryos are children under state law and that those who destroy them can be held liable for wrongful death. Alabama state lawmakers have since passed a law protecting IVF patients and providers from criminal liability, but did not address the underlying issue of whether embryos were considered people. Hinson said she strongly supports IVF. "I am pro-life and will always embrace policies that save as many lives as possible," she said. "That includes IVF, which has helped so many women struggling with fertility to become moms. I strongly support access to IVF for women," she said. Although the proposals laid out in the budget released Wednesday are likely to become law this year, they serve as a preview for how Republicans will seek to govern should they be successful in the 2024 election. Biden called the RSC's budget plan extreme in a statement issued Thursday. "My budget represents a different future," the president said. He continued, "A future where we restore the right to choose and protect other freedoms, not take them away. A future where the middle class finally has a fair shot. And we protect Social Security so the working people who built this country can retire with dignity," end quote. Republicans contend Biden's proposed budget deserves equal, if not more, scrutiny, noting it would add $4.9 trillion in new taxes and nearly $1.7 trillion in higher spending. "President Biden is addicted to taxing and spending," Hinson said in a statement. "He truly thinks taxpayer dollars are monopoly money and that there is a money tree in the basement of the White House he can pull from to fund his out-of-touch liberal agenda that Iowans don't want. I will always work to protect key programs that Iowans rely on, but I will reject Biden's wasteful spending habits that have caused inflation, driven up our deficit, and ruined our economy," she said. Moving to page 3 of the paper, an article headline, "Christians Mark Palm Sunday, Pope Decides to Skip Homily at Last Minute Amid Health Problems," and it's an Associated Press article, dateline is Jerusalem. Thousands of Christian faithful attended Palm Sunday celebration of Jerusalem's sacred Mount of Olives, marking the first day of Holy Week as conflict surges across the region. Pilgrims waved branches and fronds in the air, items that were placed before Jesus' feet as he was greeted by cheering crowds during his entrance into Jerusalem, according to the Bible. Earlier Sunday, Jerusalem's Church of the Holy Sepulchre, revered as the site of Jesus' crucifixion, also held a service. The annual celebration came as the Israeli-Hamas war rages on in Gaza, and as Israel has seen a huge downturn in tourism. The war began October 7, when Hamas militants from Gaza invaded southern Israel, killing 1,200 people and taking 250 others hostage. Israel responded with an air and ground war that has left more than 32,000 people dead, or 32,000 Palestinians dead, according to the health ministry in the Hamas-ruled territory. However, the conflict appeared to have had little effect on the procession, which swelled to a similar size as last year. Although there is war, in my impression, I don't feel any kind of tension, said David Manini, a pilgrim from Italy. The celebration marks the beginning of the most somber week in the Christian calendar, which marks Jesus' crucifixion on Good Friday and his resurrection on Easter. I'm here because I love Jesus Christ, said Jennifer Weedham, who traveled from the United States for the occasion. In Rome, Pope Francis decided at the last minute to skip his homily during Palm Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square, avoiding a strenuous speech at the start of a busy Holy Week that will test his increasingly frail health. Hobbled by bad knees and persistent respiratory problems, Francis also didn't participate in the procession of cardinals around the obelisk in the piazza at the start of the Mass. Instead, the 87-year-old Catholic pontiff blessed the palm fronds and olive branches from afar, the altar. Francis was expected to deliver a homily halfway through the service, and a prepared text had been distributed to journalists. However, when an aide presented Francis with his glasses to begin reading, the Pope made clear he wouldn't deliver the remarks, leaving the crowd waiting in silence. Vatican officials didn't immediately explain why. The Vatican press office later said the homily was replaced by a moment of silence and prayer. Francis did pronounce prayers throughout the service and offered a long appeal for peace at the end of the Mass. He said he was praying for the families of those killed in what he called an inhuman attack at a suburban Moscow concert hall, and also asked for prayers for the martyred Ukraine and people of Gaza. Vatican officials estimated some 60,000 people attended the Mass, held under a sunny, breezy spring sky. Francis spent several minutes greeting them from the Popemobile, making several loops around the piazza at the end of the service. Francis has been battling on and off all winter what he called, the Vatican also called, and described as a case of the flu, bronchitis, or a cold. Here's an article, Iran's currency hits record low value. Dateline is Tehran, Iran. Iran's currency fell to a record low on Sunday, plunging to 613,500 to the dollar as its people celebrated the Persian New Year. On Sunday, people tried to exchange riyals for foreign currency at Tehran's main hub of exchange shops in Ferdowsi Street, but most were closed due to the Nowruz holidays, which are run from March 20 to April 2. Many Iranians have seen their life savings evaporate as the local currency has depreciated. Today, it's worth about 1/20th as much as it was in 2015 when Iran signed a nuclear accord with world powers. Iran's relations with the West have been at exceptional lows since then. U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned that deal, which called for the country to end its nuclear program in return for access to frozen funds and other benefits. Dire economic conditions have contributed to widespread anger at the government in the past. And briefly, in Lebanon, an Israeli airstrike deep in Lebanon near the city of Baalbek, a stronghold of the Hezbollah militant group, wounded at least three people early Sunday, a local official said. New York City Mayor Eric Adams nixed a planned Sunday trip to the U.S.-Mexico border after the U.S. State Department flagged safety concerns at one of his planned stops in Mexico, a spokesperson said, as his and other major U.S. cities struggled to house new migrants, seeking asylum. And shooting. One person was killed and five others, including police officer, were wounded in a shooting amid a disturbance in a bar parking lot early Sunday in Indianapolis. And in Brazil, the death toll and heavy rains in Brazil this weekend climbed to at least 23 people Sunday between the southeastern states of Rio de Janeiro and Espírito Santo. Moving into sports now. College basketball, men's NCAA tournament. And there's a kind of a wrap here of what's happened the last couple days. Colic, Marquette, of Marquette, survived the Buffs. Marquette showed resolve in critical moments and avoided another early exit from March Madness. Tyler Colic had 21 points and 11 assists, and David Joplin made 2 free throws with 7.4 seconds left to help the Golden Eagles finally put away Colorado 81-77 on Sunday in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And we go to the East, where number one seeded UConn beat Northwestern, who is seeded number 9, 75-58. San Diego State, seeded number 5, 85, and then beat Yale, seeded number 13, 57, 85-57 on that one. In the West, Clemson, 72 over Baylor, 64. We go to number 4 seed Alabama, got 72, and Grand Canyon, 61. In the South, we go to Duke, who beat James Madison, 93-55. And we go to Houston, who seeded number 1. They got 100. Texas A&M made it close in overtime, 95. And in the Midwest, we have Purdue, seeded number 1, 106. Utah State, 67. And let's move over to the women's NCAA tournament, kind of a wrap-up here. LSU rallies past the Middle Tennessee folks, and they beat them. And for life of me, I don't see the score. That's my fault. I can't find it. It was 83-56. And LSU coach Kim Mulkey pledged that she wouldn't let an impending Washington Post hit piece about her derail the defending national champion Tigers during the women's NCAA tournament. Let's move on to Portland. In Portland, Duke over Ohio State, 75-63. And in Albany, it was South Carolina over North Carolina, 88-41. And it was Oregon State, 61, Nebraska, 51. Going to Albany, and it was Colorado, 63, and Kansas State, 50. Baylor, this is the women's, 75 over Virginia Tech, 72. And we're in Portland now, and we're going to Texas over Alabama, 65-54. And finally, it was Stanford, 87, over Iowa State, 81. That was in overtime, and it's the way it happened for Iowa State. And tonight, it will be Gonzaga versus Utah at 9:30, and it will be North Carolina State versus Tennessee at 3 p.m. Folks, you are listening to the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Doug Kretzinger. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call, 515-243-6833. Now it's time to turn to the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, March 25, 2024. Headline at the top of the page, page 1, is AEA Measure Dominates Forum. Possible constitutional amendment, hydrogen drilling also discussed. It's written by Bill Shea. Legislation to make some changes to Area Education Agency is moving forward, but it's quite different from what was proposed earlier this year, local lawmakers said Saturday. The House of Representatives passed an AEA bill Thursday, and it is expected to be considered by the Senate Monday, today. I want to say that our bill had a much different process and outcome than the governor's bill and the Senate bill. State Representative Ann Meyer, a Republican Fort Dodge, said during an Eggs and Issues forum at Iowa Central Community College, "The governor's bill was rejected by the House," she said. Meyer said the bill would also increase starting teacher pay to $47,500. An effort to amend the state constitution to require a supermajority vote of the legislature to increase income taxes may also move forward as this year's legislative session winds down, according to State Senator Tim Crayenbrink, Republican Fort Dodge. "We want to make it harder for whoever is in power to raise taxes," he said. A bill to require a permit for drilling for hydrogen may also emerge. A company has been drilling for hydrogen in northern Webster County. State Representative Mike Sexton, Republican Rockwell City, joined Meyer and Crayenbrink for the Eggs and Issues Forum. About 50 people attended. Eggs and Issues is sponsored by the college and the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance. At the beginning of the legislative session, Governor Kim Reynolds proposed a major overhaul of AEAs, which provide special education and media education services to school districts. Among other things, her plan would have given state special education funding now given to AEAs directly to school districts. The school districts would then decide whether to provide special education themselves or contract with AEAs or perhaps some other entity for those services. Her plan ran into stiff opposition and was voted down. Was voted down by a House committee. These are the key provisions of the new House bill, according to Meyer. All special education money goes to AEAs in the first year after it becomes law. After that, school districts get 10% of that money. School districts get more flexibility with media services. There will be no change to early access services AEAs provide to special needs children before they are old enough to go to school. Salaries of AEA chiefs can be a maximum of 125% of the average of salaries of the top five school superintendents in the regions they serve. A task force will be created and charged with making recommendations on special education by December. Meyer said the bill will increase the salary for first-year teachers to $47,500, rising to $50,000 in their second year. "Our superintendents, especially in Fort Dodge, say that is going to be a game-changer," Meyer said. "The bill includes $22.3 million to raise all teachers' salaries," she said. "It goes to move everybody up," Sexton said. "The money's there to do that." Crayenbrink said the Senate passed its own AEA bill earlier in the legislative session, prompting Reynolds and the House to work on a revised plan. "The outcome of this has to be focused on how our students will be better off than before," he said. He suggested that the House bill will be approved by the Senate. "We'll probably end up voting for it," he said. There were apparently several educators in the audience, and the majority of questions posed to the lawmakers during the forum were about specific details of the AEA legislation. Crayenbrink said the proposed constitutional amendment would require a two-thirds majority vote of the legislature to raise taxes. Sexton said the measure would only apply to income taxes. "Sales taxes aren't part of that bill," he said. In Iowa, proposed amendments to the state constitution must be approved by the legislature in two separate general assemblies and then be approved by the voters. Thus, the proposed two-thirds majority amendment would have to be approved by lawmakers this year and again in 2025 before being presented to the voters. Now, in hydrogen drilling, Twin Rivers Exploration has been drilling into the ground near 110th Street and Washington Avenue in Webster County in search of hydrogen. There are no state or local rules regarding the drilling. Cranbrink said there is a bill that would create a process to apply for a oxygen drilling permit from the State Department of Natural Resources. He said the company is drilling more than 6,000 feet into the ground in search of hydrogen. They're saying that there's no way that can affect your water aquifer, he said. From page one, property tax hearing is tonight. The headline, Fort Dodge City Council will also consider contracts, written by Bill Shea. The Fort Dodge City Council will have a public hearing on the proposed property tax rate this evening, then consider awarding some contracts for infrastructure work. The council's work will begin at 5 p.m. with a hearing on the total maximum property tax for the 2024-25 fiscal year. The proposed maximum tax rate is $20.96 per $1,000 of taxable value. This hearing is a new requirement under state law. When the hearing is over, the council will have a workshop on the development of Corridor Plaza. That will be followed by a workshop on animal control. At 6 p.m., the council's regular business meeting will start. During that session, the council will consider awarding a contract for reconstruction of the intersection of Avenue C and Kenyon Road. That project is to be done this year, while the construction of the westbound side of the Kenyon Road Bridge is underway. Castor Construction of Fort Dodge submitted the apparent low bid of about $1.3 million. The council will also consider awarding contracts for the reconstruction of the parking lot behind the municipal building, 819 First Avenue South, and the creation of a storage lot next to the Fort Dodge fiber facility at 204 South 8th Street. One more article here from page 3 of the Messenger. Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire is number one at the box office with $45.2 million. It says Ghostbusters is still a good business. Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire collected $45.2 million in ticket sales over the weekend, according to studio estimates Sunday, handing Sony Pictures the studio's first number one film since last summer. The opening weekend for Frozen Empire in 4,345 theaters was nearly exactly the same as the $44 million launch for Ghostbusters Afterlife in 2021. Afterlife rebooted the franchise with a sequel built around the descendants Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace of Harold Ramis, Egon Spengler, along with Paul Rudd's seismologist Gary Guberson. Neither film has been a hit with critics, but audiences have been more receptive. Frozen Empire garnered a B-plus cinema score from moviegoers, a tick down from the A-minus score for Afterlife. Frozen Empire isn't assured of profitability, but it will hope for sustained business over spring break. Folks, going to move into the obituary section today. We have a couple, three here. A couple of them are pretty long. I'll probably cut them down a little bit. But I want you to know about Dennis Ammann, A-M-M-A-N, known as Denny, 81, Fort Dodge, passed away the 23rd of March at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home after a lengthy battle with Alzheimer's and more recently cancer. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, March 26, tomorrow, 5 to 7 p.m. at Gunderson Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, March 27, 1:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Fort Dodge. The family interment at North Lawn Cemetery will be at a later date. Denny was born May 19, 1942 in Iowa Falls to Harold and Nona Allen Ammann. As an active Boy Scout, Denny was one of 52,000 scouts that attended the National Boy Scout Jamboree in Valley Forge, New York in 1957. And while still in high school, Denny joined the Naval Reserve Unit in Mason City. After graduating from Iowa Falls High School in 1960, he attended Ellsworth Junior College for 1 year before going active in the U.S. Navy. After boot camp, Denny was stationed aboard the USS St. Paul, which was home ported in Yokosuka, Japan, And after his discharge in 1963, Denny attended the Institute of Medical Technology in Minneapolis, where he met his future wife, Karen Cuckey, in January of 64. And before their marriage, on January 9, 1965, at the First Presbyterian Church in Fort Dodge, Denny had the opportunity to join Karen's father in his expanded farm operation. The couple farmed in the Duncombe area for 43 years before retiring in Fort Dodge. And there's much more here. He was preceded in death by his parents, stepfather Laverne Pomeran, grandparents Peter and Josephine Meyer Ammon, and Roy and Carrie Borton Allen. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to the First Presbyterian Church in Webster County, 4-H, Webster County 4-H Foundation, Alzheimer's Association, or American Cancer Society. Wayne Anderson, 80, of Fort Dodge, passed away Saturday, March 23, at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Thursday, March 28, at St. Olaf Lutheran Church. Entombment will be at the Chapel of Peace Mausoleum in North Lawn Cemetery. A visitation will be 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at Lauffersweiler Funeral Home. Elizabeth Ali Davis, A-L-I, Ali, 30, died unexpectedly March 19 at her apartment in Iowa City. She was planning on graduating in May with a Master's of Public Health and Master's of Hospital Administration. She had completed coursework during earning a Doctor of Jurisprudence degree. Her undergraduate degrees include double major in English and linguistics, with a minor in anthropology. She also earned a certificate in notification writing and a certificate in teaching English as a second language. She loved learning and was a brilliant student. While at the University of Iowa, she was a resident assistant and an intern at Iowa Youth Writing Project. And I remember reading about this a couple days ago. I think I read this one also, so I think I'm repeating this. But let me just go on to say she was passionate about reading, books, collecting rocks and crystals, and anything else she fancied. Ali was her extended family's go-to person for information on genetics and ancestry research. Celebration of Life will be held at Lauffersweiler Funeral Home, 307 South 12th Street, Fort Dodge, Monday, today, 10 to 12. From 10 to 12, sharing of memories from 12 p.m. All at the funeral home, in lieu of flowers, memorial contributions be sent to RVAP 108 River Street, Iowa City, Iowa, or online at rvap.uiowa.edu/support-RVAP. Sports section of today's paper. Here's an article. It's the headline says, Gales look to defend at the net. There's a picture here, and a nice color picture. St. Edmund girls returning letter winners. Left to right, and we see Cambry Lunn, L-U-N-N. We see Peyton Bradley and Lauren Gibb. This article is written by Dana Becker. For the first time in program history, the St. Edmund girls tennis team enters the season with something to defend. Under head coach Sean Neverman, the Gales swept the regular season and the tournament titles in the North Central Conference last spring. And now, with three returning members of the varsity lineup back along with several interesting newcomers, expectations remain high for St. Edmund. "I'm super excited for this season," Neverman said. "The success we had last year gave the girls a taste of winning. That made them hungry to do it again this year," he said. Lauren Gibb returned to the school and will be back on the tennis courts alongside fellow three-year regulars Peyton Bradley and Cambry Lunn. St. Edmund went 9-2 in duels last year, falling to Decorah in a Class 1A regional championship. They knocked off both Applington, Parkersburg, and Waverly Shellrock in the postseason as those two programs combined to win 21 duels. Gibb placed second at the NCC meet in singles as a sophomore, with the team of Lunn and Bradley taking third in doubles. I think that being one win away from state as a team made the girls work harder in the off season, Neverman said. They want to not only repeat the successes of last year, but take the next step. Joining Gibb, Bradley, and Lunn from the junior class will be Maddie Cripe, C-R-I-P-E, Braylon Reese, Nicole Mosier, and Emily Mosier. Sophomores include Ava Andrew, Ava Underberg, Sophia Dutcher, Lucy Mittling, and Ella Munday, with freshmen Chloe Palmer, Abby Huss, Nina Smith, and Lizzie Tiernan rounding out the roster. Ava and Ava filled in on varsity some last year when we had girls out, so that was good experience for them, Neverman said. We have a lot of letter winners from cheer to cross country to volleyball to basketball to softball. The Gales open the season at Webster City on Tuesday. They will host NCAA meet on May 1. Schedule here has March 26 at Webster City, April 2, Nevada, Arlington Parkersburg, at Storm Lake, Clear Lake, at Iowa Falls, South Hayden, Carol Kemper, Hampton DuPont, at Grundy Center. I think I got that right. Host North Central Conference meet, May 1. And the top-seeded Hawkeyes beat West Virginia women's basketball. West Virginia coach Mark Kellogg is entertained watching superstar Caitlin Clark and Iowa's offense, up to the point when he realizes his team is going to have to defend the Hawkeyes. The eighth-seeded Mountaineers get that chance tonight, against top-seeded Iowa in the second round of the women's NCAA tournament. When they get going, they get clicking. It's fun to watch, Kellogg said Sunday. Not to prepare for, but it is fun to watch, he said. The Hawkeyes, 30-4, lead the nation in scoring at 92.8 points per game and in three-pointers at 11.3 per game. They are also third in the nation in assist-to-turnover ratio. Combine that with the fact that this is almost the same team that made it to the season's national championship game, and Kellogg knows the challenge his team faces. Iowa will be playing on its home court in the second round for the third consecutive season. I think coming out with a strong start will be really important for us, but I think that goes for any game, said Clark, who became Division I's all-time leading scorer earlier this season and leads the nation in scoring at 31.8 game points per game. You want to come out and set the tone. Also, our group has played in quite a few March Madness games where we didn't come out and set the tone, and we were able to take a breath and respond. Hawkeyes opened the tournament with 91-65 win over Holy Cross on Saturday, but Clark doesn't expect similar margins going forward. And that's game is tonight. And it is on ESPN, 6:30 p.m. Men's college basketball, Drake's DeVries, headed to West Virginia. By John Raby, it is written. West Virginia tapped Drake men's basketball coach Darian DeVries on Sunday to move the Mountaineers past one of the ugliest years in school history. DeVries signed a 5-year contract, athletic director Ren Baker said. Terms of the deal weren't disclosed. DeVries' hiring came 3 days after Drake bowed out of the NCAA tournament with a first-round loss to Washington State. Coach DeVries is a phenomenal basketball coach and an even better person, and possesses all the qualities we desired in the next leader of our men's basketball program, Baker said. His teams play hard and smart and are efficient on both ends of the floor. He has proven to be a strong recruiter and developer of players, but even more importantly, a leader with integrity who develops character in the young men he coaches. The 48-year-old DeVries is a 2-time Missouri Valley Conference Coach of the Year. He compiled a 150-55 record in 6 seasons and took Drake to the NCAA tournament 3 times. Drake won at least 25 games in 4 straight seasons. The Bulldogs tied the school record for wins this season, finishing 28-7. Drake's 30-1 home record over the past 2 seasons tied FAU for the best in Division I. DeVries replaces interim Josh Eilert, who took over after the messy exit of Hall of Fame coach Bob Huggins last summer. With a multitude of player defections, injuries, and other distractions, the Mountaineers went 9-23 and finished last in the Big 12. It was a school record for losses and the fewest wins since the 2001-02 team went 8-20 in Gale Catlett's final season. I'm honored to lead this historic program, which has an outstanding tradition and passionate fan base, DeVries said in the statement. Game days in the WVU Coliseum are legendary, and the incredible support for Mountaineer basketball is known nationwide. I look forward to building on the success of the program, he said. Baker wanted a coach with a track record of success in Division I. West Virginia, which had last reached the Final Four in 2010, hasn't had much of that lately, with 3 last-place finishes in the Big 12 since 2019 and 2 NCAA tournament berths in the last 6 seasons. West Virginia has never won a Big 12 regular season or tournament title. Baker also wanted his new coach to have an appreciation for both the university and the culture and history of a rural state that has no sports franchises. We have heard so many great things about West Virginia and its people, and we can't wait to get there, DeVries said. DeVries' son, Tucker, a junior, was Drake's top scorer this season at 21.6 points per game. DeVries' brother is former Detroit Lions defensive end Jared DeVries. Before coming to Drake, DeVries was an assistant at Creighton for 17 years. The Blue Jays made 12 NCAA tournament appearances in that span. DeVries played for 4 seasons as a guard under Eldon Miller at Northern Iowa. Here's a sports on TV rundown for you. Women's college basketball, Mississippi is at Notre Dame at 1 p.m., ESPN2, Tennessee's at North Carolina State, 3 p.m., ESPN, Syracuse is at UConn, 5 p.m. on ESPN, Oklahoma's at Indiana, 5:30 p.m., ESPN2, West Virginia at Iowa, that's 7 p.m., West Virginia at Iowa is 7 p.m. on ESPN. Creighton at UCLA, 7:30 p.m., ESPN2. Kansas at Southern Cal, 9 p.m., ESPN. Utah at Gonzaga, 9:30 p.m., ESPN. And Major League Baseball, if you're interested, New York Mets versus New York Yankees, noon, MLBN. St. Louis at Chicago Cubs, 3 p.m., MLBN. Boston at Texas, 7 p.m., MLBN. Wrestling is the story we're going to cover now. Kansas City, written by Dana Becker. And the headline says, Iowa State's Carr, Northern Iowa's Kekelson, crowned NCAA Kings. David Carr and Parker Kekison finished the wrestling season on top of the podium, claiming NCAA championships here Saturday night. Carr earned his second life title for Iowa State, while Kekison his first competing for Northern Iowa. Penn State, who clinched a 3rd straight team championship on Friday, finished with a tournament record, 172.5 points, as Levi Haynes, Carter Starocki, Aaron Brooks, and Greg Kirkvallet all won individual titles. Cornell was runners-up, followed by Michigan, the Cyclones, and Iowa rounding out the top 5. The Panthers placed 14th overall. Carr, who won it all as a freshman and was a runner-up last year, scored a thrilling 9-8 decision over previously unbeaten Mitchell Messenbrink of Penn State at 165 pounds. After taking a 3-1 lead over the first, Carr was hit with 2 stall calls in the second. With 29 seconds left in the period, though, he locked in another three-point takedown to go up 4-2. In the third, another stall call went against Carr, with Messenbrink getting an escape and a takedown. As the match went under a minute, Carr escaped and earned the winning point via riding time for the title to become the 17th Cyclone to win at least two titles. He plans to continue his pursuit of a spot on the Olympic team, just like his dad, Nate, who was a bronze medalist and three-time NCAA champion. Carr is the first five-time All-American in program history and the 12th to finish four times on the podium at the Nationals. He has 21 career NCAA wins, are a new school record. Kekizen, hope I'm pronouncing that right, the top seed at 184 pounds, finished off his season a perfect 31-0 with a 14-5 major decision over Dustin Plott from Oklahoma State. The UNI standout, who had finished third twice and was a runner-up last year, earned bonus points in all his matches at Nationals with three major decisions and two technical falls. Me and assistant coach Lee Roper sat down, Kekison said. We set a goal to try and bonus everyone. That eased my mind. It is just proof that when you write stuff down, you can achieve it, he said. Before we close it off today, on this date in 1954, RCA announced it had begun producing color television sets at its plant in the Bloomington, Indiana. And in 1960, Ray Charles recorded Georgia on My Mind as part of his The Genius Hits the Road album in New York. And finally, in 1965, this date, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. led 25,000 people to the Alabama State Capitol in Montgomery after a five-day march from Selma to protest the denial of voting rights to blacks. Later that day, civil rights activist Viola Liuzzo, a white Detroit homemaker, was shot and killed by Ku Klux Klansmen. So that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Monday, March 25, Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm your reader, Doug Kretzinger. I want to thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, and I hope you have a great day.